I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. On this week's episode, we've gone Butler Barmy, because in the red corner, Gerard Butler is Jacob Jake Lawson, and he has to save the planet in this disaster flick, come sci-fi movie, come whodunit, come action film, come political thriller. Yes, why have one movie genre when you can have five? And why give Jim Sturgess a role-appropriate haircut when you can just not? From 2017, it's Geostorm.
Mr. President, one of our thermospheric satellites malfunctioned over Afghanistan.
So your proposal is what?
We shut down all satellites.
I don't need to remind all of you how many people died from catastrophic climate conditions.
Make sure there's no further incidents.
Are you going back up to space?
But I'm coming back. I promise.
Have a safe trip, sir.
Just don't touch anything.
Main engine started.
While in the blue corner, Gerard Butler is John Jake Garrity, and he has to save his family from an interstellar comet by getting them to a bunker. If that sounds easy, it's not, because there's nothing like a comet to bring out the crazy in people, like the dude from The Office who literally steals a child. From 2021, it's Greenland.
We now are getting word that the fragment has hit Central Florida.
Oh my God.
Wait, are some more pieces gonna hit?
Come on, let's go.
But the sky's on fire.
2 days. They got it all wrong. There's a ton of fragments. Planet killers.
Space agencies are predicting an extinction-level event.
We're gonna be together.
All right, get them.
We're just trying to get to safety.
They've been tracking the military flights to bunkers in Greenland.
It's their only chance.
Move back!
Perimeter breach. Runway 33.
Don't be running!
So what connects these two films, and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I won't be the president who hands over damaged goods. Not now, not ever. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crumpton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How does today find you both? Lovely to have your voices in my head.
I've got a little bit of a dust allergy, which is, apologies in advance for the snot, but what can I do? Oh, I could clean my house is what I could do, but that seems to be beyond me. So yeah, I'm just, that's where I am.
I was giving you the benefit of the doubt. I assumed it was because work was taking place in the house to rectify the damaged boiler situation.
Oh no, we've kicked that into the long grass. I tell you what, Mark got distracted because he found a sack of Seville oranges in Lewisham Market. And if you want a recipe with Seville oranges in, he's your man. If you want a builder, he's not engaging with that right now because we've got a sack of oranges to get through. That's the week we're having. I'm like, how's it going? He's like, what about with fennel? It's like, I don't give a shit if we have it with fennel or in a cake or whatever. All I care about are builders. But still.
Oh, wow. I'm having a better week than you then. I've made friends with the guy who works in my newsagent. And every time I go in now, whether I want to or not really, I have a shot of limoncello with him. So... which is lovely in the evening. Lovely of an evening when you're going for your evening dog walk. About 11 in the morning. Not a great idea.
But, it's a dream scenario. Dreamy.
Hey, Alex, limoncello? Yeah, sure.
Start a podcast with him.
How are you, Christopher?
I'm good, thanks.
Great stuff. Let's crack on. So this week's clash, Geostorm versus Greenland, or as we're calling it, our bonkers butler bonanza. Two butlers for the price of one. Get your butlers while they're hot. These were my choices. Why, I'm sure, is the question that is being asked. Sometimes you want to hurt the things you love. I hope you both enjoyed Geostorm. But because I'm not that bad, I soften the blow. And because I know that you both love Deep Impact, you fucking love it. You love it so much, much more than Armageddon. I thought we should do basically a better Deep Impact so we can all kind of enjoy this movie is our great comet movie instead of Deep Impact, which you love.
Yeah, what a week. Probably a short one this week, I feel, for me. Not much jeopardy, if I'm being honest, about, which is the better film? I don't know.
I think you're wrong, Victoria. Not wrong. Of course, I wouldn't start off our journey this week saying you're wrong. But I think Geostorm is going to surprise you. I think I've got an argument for Geostorm that may surprise you. So I don't think this week is as cut and dry as you possibly think it is.
Okay, I'm genuinely interested. And not snarkily, I'm genuinely interested to see what you've got.
Good. I wouldn't put two such uneven films next to each other if I didn't have a curveball to pitch you later on.
Fair enough.
All right. So the clue I gave on last week's show was so very good that I don't need to repeat it. we can just all enjoy the moment that was last week. Chris followed that up on Twitter with nothing. He wrote nothing this week, Chris.
Because you left me speechless, Alex.
Nevertheless, we did get some great guesses on Twitter. We are on Twitter at ClashPod, on Instagram at ClashPod. A few right answers this week from Paul Jordan, Paul Logue, but the quickest in less than 60 seconds. He is a previous winner. Congratulations, Andrew Logan. You have our respect. We do have a couple of other pairing suggestions this week from Nick Cook and Johnny Tightlips, which I'm assuming are a joke. They've suggested at some point we do Waterworld versus Aquaman.
Now, well, that's good. Chris, that is good.
Surely Waterworld goes a Fury Road, Chris.
No, I think they're going with Fish Boys, and I think it's that sounds good.
Right. Well, okay. Okay. Well, agree to disagree. Connections then between these two movies. What have you got for me?
Smart kids, which is a trope. I hate in one and I don't mind in the other, but like very clever kids.
Yeah. I've seen it a lot. And I think sometimes, I think you're right. I think in one it works better than the other because somehow a lot of smart kids in movies come with sass, added sass. It's not like they're smart and like just cool with it. They're smart and sassy about it.
Yeah, Hiding under bridges as well. So when stuff gets tricky, hide under a bridge, which I'd never thought of. So I'm glad I saw these films for that life hack, if you will.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. I didn't even pick up on that one. That's a good one. Good one.
Is this one? Gerard Butler plays an action hero in both films, but it's kind of a non-traditional action hero job he's got. He's a structural engineer in the second film. In the first film, I'm not 100% sure what his job is, but I think it's satellite maker, maybe?
I think it's scientist, Chris. Come on.
Okay,
everyone's
sorry.
A scientist. He's a scientist.
He's a builder scientist, though. He built the ICSS, the International Climate Space Station. So he's a builder. I've got Butler Builds. So I'm agreeing with you, Chris. He's a builder. Butler Builds.
Okay. Good.
Phones. 90% of both films revolve around phone calls or an inability to make phone calls.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any more?
No.
Neither does anything original with the disaster movie format.
Okay.
One nearly does. Nearly does. And then wimps out at the last minute.
I quite like the fact that both have on-screen countdown clocks to when everyone will die. it's just great. Especially in Greenland, where it's on the news. And I think it's called Planet Killer Countdown, 23 hours to go. Like it's fucking New Year's Eve or something. Like people are like, how long? It's like, look at the countdown, only 23 hours left. Weird. So the actual connection I'm going for is the butler did it. There you go. on Thursday, Victoria is guiding us to Greenland, which means today Chris is cooking up a geostorm. Chris, take us on a journey.
Geostorm kicks off in the distant future of 2019. When temperatures have risen, ocean patterns have changed and ice caps have melted, resulting in extreme weather, unleashing a wave of destruction on the planet. To save ourselves, we create Dutch Boy, a giant net filled with satellites to stop the weather. But then that goes wrong, and only the bloke who built it can save the day. Which is a stupid idea in a film that's filled with stupid ideas. Indeed, test audiences were so confused by this nonsense that the director of Stallone's Judge Dredd was brought in to clear things up. But not even he could fix this actual disaster. So, Alex...
Yo.
Let's start with you, because ever since we came up with the idea for this podcast, you've wanted to do Geostorm. Why?
I think this is a false memory. I'm not having this. I'm not having my name besmirched. I think once we sat together and we were talking about movie twinning, like this, the whole principle of like Dante's Peak, Volcano, and we said The Day After Tomorrow, and I said... Geostorm. And that is the limit of my enthusiasm about doing Geostorm. However, knowing that you were going to suggest this, I've actually looked at this movie with a very, very severe eye. And I found a truth in this film that maybe you haven't. And I'm going to tell you about that truth. But for the moment, yeah, Geostorm. I've watched it once before.
We've established right. Alex is obsessed with Geostorm. Vicky, how about you?
When we started talking about this podcast, which I think was 2019, Alex was obsessed with Geostorm.
Yes, I remember it well.
Yeah. And so for that reason, I didn't watch it because A, I was like, I'll have to watch it for this. But B, if he's obsessed with it, red flag. So no, I'm not going to watch it. So this was my first time.
Yeah, don't you find yourself these days avoiding watching films if you think it's going to come up on the podcast?
So yeah.
Because I'm annoyed.
It's more fun sometimes to have fresh eyes on it, I think.
Agreed, because I heard this was a terrible film. I watched it when it was on the telly. I thought it was quite bad. And I thought I'd never have to watch it again. So I quite resented having to pay my £3.50 or whatever it was to watch Geostorm for a second bloody time. But when one member of the panel is obsessed with the film, then it's only right that we give it the benefit of the doubt.
I just want to clear up, because we had a message on Twitter from This Is The Sea going, why does Alex hate us? I don't hate people by picking these movies. I don't hate you. I think there is an importance about understanding Geostorm. There's going to be a benefit for all of us by the end of this show. This is an important day. You sit where you are. You don't change this part. You listen and you will learn something. All right, let's do this.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the background to this film. And I'm going to start with a quote from Gerard Butler himself. He says, whenever anyone questions the movie, I know it comes from such a pure place because Dean Devlin's daughter gave him the idea. She said, "Dad, can't we put something up in the sky that will fix this?" And that's where Geostorm comes from. It's a story of what if, that cautionary tale of hope.
Mm.
So this is all the fault of a little girl, is what Gerard Butler's basically saying. A little six-year-old girl.
You know, another movie based on a child's idea was Monster Trucks. And I think the guy lost his job after that. So it's not a good system.
It could be argued that Dean Devlin lost his job as well on this film. But let's talk a little bit about him. He's an actor, Dean Devlin, who became a writer and producer of big disaster movie thanks to his partnership with Roland Emmerich. So he wrote Independence Day and Godzilla, and he decided that he wanted to direct a dark disaster movie of his own based on his daughter's idea. So he wrote Geostorm, and it's fair to say things did not go well. The film was shot in 2014 and was due to hit screens in 2016, but was delayed and pushed back and delayed several times, largely due to disastrous test screenings. Another quote from Gerard Butler. "You don't really know until you show a movie to an audience and you can go, oh, okay, they're not really understanding that bit, or this bit isn't landing as it should. You can be like, how can they not get that? Maybe it's a case of we said it in the script, but we didn't show it to the audience. It's crazy how that can happen." And it most definitely happened here, because test audiences had no fucking idea what was going on. Jerry Bruckheimer was brought aboard to oversee $15 million worth of significant reshoots due to problems with storyline clarity, plot credibility, and character motivation. So the writer of Shutter Island, whose name I can't pronounce, was brought in to craft some new scenes. A scientist was adding to proceedings. I know, Vicky, you're keen on the scientists in this film. So we did get an additional scientist. I'm not clear which one. I think it might be the German.
No, my vote is Cheng. I think Cheng is, if you look at Cheng's scenes, they're the scenes in which Jim Sturgess is clearly wearing a wig, which means they've come from reshoots, which means they were added later and they're all with Cheng. There's a lot of scenes in which Jim Sturgess wears a wig in this. I mean, what other thing he must have been shooting to be entirely bald? I don't know, because it's short hair, but it's a wig.
I'm so glad you've said that. But the minute he popped up, I was like, can someone just trim the back of his hair? Because it's over the back of his collar, and in the job he has, that I don't think that's allowed. That's unacceptable. It's a very smart profession, very formal. Yeah. It was just annoying me so much.
He looks like he's just rolled out of a Britpop nightclub circa 1995 and into the White House.
Yeah, he's there on work experience. So that's what he looks like. Yeah, so no point getting your hair cut. You'll be out there in a week.
Hey, Ed Harris, have you heard the new menswear track? It's fucking awesome.
Gerard Butler's wife in the movie, who was previously a character in the film, she was recast and then pretty much jettisoned from the whole thing. She sort of gets one line while she's standing in the background of a scene.
Yeah.
There was even an issue with the music.
Oh, my God. That explains so much. I think they just gave his daughter his wife's old lines. That's because when he's leaving for space, and she's what, 16 maximum in this film?
I don't even think she's 16. Like, right. I don't know. I would say like 14 maximum.
Yeah.
Right, fine. So she's 14 in this film. And she is clearly reading dialogue written for a much older actress, because she's like, so you're going to space then? Uh-huh. And he's like, yeah, but I'll be back. And she's like, oh, really? Because you're not very reliable like that. And it's like, why is this kid like a 40-year-old woman? What's going on?
There was also an issue with the music, apparently, where a dramatic scene was playing out. It was spoiled by a comedic score playing underneath. So a new composer was brought on board. And I'm just imagining the Benny Hill theme tune now playing over some of those scenes of mass death and destruction. But most dramatically, Warner Brothers was granted Special Directors Guild dispensation to allow another filmmaker, Danny Cannon, to helm the new scenes. That's Danny Yay! Cannon of Judge Dredd fame. But again, I'm going to quote Mr. Butler again. He's adamant that the finished film is very much Dean Devlin's. He said, "I think he wrote a beautiful script and directed a great movie. But listen, this movie is an epic undertaking and surprisingly complex plot. You've got to be sure that it all makes sense. You want to make it challenging, but ultimately you want the audience to understand it. So it just needed a bit of finessing."
I mean, it's the right thing to say. You can't, you know, he's worked intensely with him. He doesn't want to throw him under the bus. And I get why he's got to say things like that. But maybe Dean Devlin has made a great film, but this is not it.
And $15 million is more than just a bit of finessing, I would say, as well.
That's depressing. So depressing.
Geostorm's troubles weren't over there either, because a string of horrendous hurricanes hit the US around the time of the film's release. Hurricane Harvey destroyed parts of Texas. Hurricane Irma devastated Florida. So Warner had to rethink their marketing campaign at the last minute. They crafted new trailers that downplayed the weather angle, which undermines the film. And it's tricky when you've got storm in the title of your movie.
Yeah. Didn't they have to change the tagline as well? Wasn't the tagline something like "Brave the Storm" or "Survive the Storm"? And it's like, scratch that now.
Yeah, they had to contact cinema owners asking them to remove posters that featured a giant tsunami under the words "Brave the Storm." Yeah. So new posters replaced that tagline with "Control the weather, control the world."
Okay.
But those measures couldn't stop the critics, who went at Geostorm hard. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 16%, and audiences seem to hate it just as much, although it did a bit better internationally than it did in the States. But the film, they reckon the film, thanks to those reshoots and all these other issues, their film needed to gross $300 million to even break even, and it ended up making just over $200 million. So it recorded some serious losses.
Yeah.
So that's the background. It's quite depressing, really.
Only because of the way you read it. You could have read that whole thing with some Benny Hill music underneath, and it would have been a very different section of the show.
I guess also the hurricanes killing all those people. But aside from that, I guess it was quite funny. Should we talk about the movie then?
Yes,
only, I just want to very quickly interject with my favourite Gerard Butler performance. It's not tragically in Geostorm. It's him as Attila the Hun in the TV series Attila, in which he appears alongside Tim Curry. That completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference.
Are you deflated then? Are you a bit over it? Because if you're over it, it needs to stop.
I think I might be a little bit. I mean, I feel like I'm sort of treading water with it. It doesn't seem to have evolved.
It hasn't brought you any joy, has it, in the last few weeks? No.
And the problem
hasn't.
Is I've used that one before, the last time we did a Gerard Butler movie as well.
Mate.
So it's tainted. There's a lot of self-loathing going on with that one, but I couldn't find anything else. So let's just skip over it. Let's move on. I'll do some thinking.
Also, I was going to ask you guys, if one of us, say, had recently written a script where about a pirate and they really want Gerard Butler to play the pirate in it, is it all right for them to only say nice things about Gerard Butler for the next two shows?
Well, in that very niche hypothetical situation, yeah, absolutely.
Good. All right, excellent. He's terrific in this film. Should we talk about the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Gerard Butler in that opening scene where he arrives and he looks like he's just woken up in a beer bin.
He looks good. He looks terrific.
I'm just sort of testing the water for how serious you're going to take this, because he's like, I was just flown in from space, and it's like, what are you still drunk? Give your fucking tie. Give me your tie. I've flown in from space. Shut up, Richard Schiff. You've got a mistress, and you're puffing your chest out for your fucking mistress. I've flown in from space, Dutch boy.
Dutch boy, that is the first mistake. Is it, to me, Dutch boy, it just sounds like a sex thing. And so I couldn't drop it the whole thing. They're like, get the Dutch boy on it. Where it's like, yuck, like, I don't even want to think about what that is.
What about the voiceover at the start?
Right, first of all, it nearly got a pass because her voice sounds a lot like the little girl in The Crow. So I was like, all right, maybe, because of my historical love for that film. But on a much more serious note, the little girl is like, weather got really bad and there was fuck all we could do about it. And it's like, what about the carbon? Like, she's like, and what we did is we fought back together. And there's not a mention made of the fact that the planet is being heated artificially by us, and that if the UN were going to come together on something, maybe it would be to stick to a net zero emissions target or some such. But it seems it puts the weather as this like external force that we have absolutely no influence over, which is what we did think until about 100 years ago. And now we know that we do have an influence on it. So where was that in the voiceover?
Yeah. But she, you can't put all that in the voiceover if you're going to have the kid be as sassy as she is in that voiceover, because she doesn't really like the people of the past. Because when she's talking about the hurricanes and stuff, she's like, they called it extreme weather. They didn't know what extreme was, the dicks. It's like she's got a real issue with like how much better her bad weather is now. And also, like, this film was made in 2017. Why is it set in 2019? Like, why would you set a movie? Why, like, when it's 2 years in the future and there's no way we'd have a space station and a net of satellites called Dutch Boy 2 years from when this film is released? Like, it's a strange decision, unless you accept that this movie takes place in an alternate reality, which I think is a very strong argument for the whole universe of Geostorm. This is Earth, but in a parallel dimension.
Okay.
Sowing some seeds. That's all I'm doing right now. Sowing some seeds.
Is this your theory that's going to rescue Geostorm? Okay. So Gerard Butler is my favourite character type here. He's a maverick. As you said, he's 1 hour late to the Senate committee meeting. And we find out he fails to follow procedure. He ignores the chain of command. He punched a federal inspector in the face because he brought Dutch Boy online and made it operational without consent. But he saved lives, goddammit. But his attitude does not go well with the committee. And he ends up losing his job to his brother and then being fired on the spot.
That's a good scene when Jim Sturgis's haircut turns up and it's like, he's like, that didn't go well. And Gerard Butler's like, no, I fine did. I flew in from space. And he goes, listen, Dad. I mean, brother. You're fired.
And also a shout out. And I know how hard it is. We all know how hard it is to write sibling exposition because no one ever in the real world goes, hey, little brother, not ever. But scripts often find a way around this by going, do you remember at mum's birthday? Or more commonly, ever since mom died, which is the difficult one. And even though their mom is died, they don't go there. Gerard Butler just says, hey, little brother. It's like a brilliant big tick for me, drinking game.
Yeah. And I will just help with your, not your, Chris, just general casting of Gerard Butler in anyone's script as a pirate captain. This is the worst he looks in the film. Like, I think they filmed this first. He saw the rushes because by the end, he looks phenomenal. He's back. Like, this is the worst he looks.
I never believed they were brothers, though, at any point in the film.
What a million years.
Yeah. Why would you? Why would you on any level?
Fair enough. All right. So we cut to 3 years later. Max, the Jim Sturgis character, Max is now, I think he's Assistant Secretary of State, I think.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
The cut to 3 years later, I missed that. Is it in the is it a caption? Because then Gerard Butler's living in a camper van and he's like, I lost my family. I lost everything. I was like, when? I thought it was like the cut was like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I did too.
They either say it or it's on screen, but it's definitely 3 years later because it's written here in my notes.
Sorry. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And Max is dating a Secret Service agent, Sarah Wilson, played by Abby Cornish. So she's not professional. This is probably why you shouldn't have women in the Secret Service, because they'll just start sleeping with the people they're supposed to protect. So
no, it's because of our periods. That's wrong. You're right. Sorry, I've got to call you out on that, Chris. Okay. It's because once a month, we can't make a fucking decision. So that's the reason. That's the actual reason.
If Air Force One crashed into the ocean, they attract sharks and the president might die.
Look, some things are just true. And as much as it doesn't connect with my politics, you know, you can't avoid facts. So...
And Vicky was actually offered a job in the Secret Service. She went, no, because I'm a danger to those around me.
I'm a very heavy bleeder. So you don't want me anywhere near.
Whoa. Bingo. I call Victoria bingo. I never thought I'd get it, but heavy bleeder for a full house. I didn't think it was coming. I never thought I'd get Clash Pod full house bingo. Heavy bleeder.
Stop saying it. Stop saying it. Moving on.
Poor Chris.
America is handing over Dutch Boy to the international community in a couple of weeks, but the shit is hitting the fan, or the ice is hitting the Afghanistan desert because there's a village frozen to death in the middle
of
the desert.
That looked great. I like that. I thought that was cool. Image. Yeah, yeah, really good.
So they think it was caused by Dutch Boy and they need engineers up there fixing it. Well, maybe not engineers. They need one man. There's only one man that can do this.
This scene makes no sense. Jim Sturgess is pleading and he's like, we have to do something. And everyone's like, well, I'm not really sure about that. And it's like, why is it? It's basic common sense that someone has to fix it. Yeah. But he's like, no, we've got to fix it. They're like, well, it's on you, Jim Sturgess. Like, you, yeah. If you say so.
He introduces concepts that that no one else had introduced, only to then deny those ideas. Like he goes, not suits though. We're not sending suits up there. It's like no one suggested sending suits up there. What a terrible idea! Yeah, he's like, not suits. We'll send engineers, real people. It's like, well, duh, Jim Sturgess. Yeah, because is this after the Indian astronaut has died on the space station?
It's just before that happens, Mahmood.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Does he die because Gerard Butler built a space station where at any point the entire corridor, like wall, could just blow out into space? Why is that? Why does that room exist? Why would you build a room where in like 3 seconds flat, when would you ever need to be from inside a space station to outside a space station so quickly that a wall explodes into space?
I don't know. If you want to really question. Quickly get sucked off, because he does, doesn't he? He gets sucked right off in that scene.
Are you playing to Gerard Butler on this show? Do you think that's his sense of humour? Is that? Do you think somewhere he's going, hey, I'm looking for a pirate role?
Yeah, you should send him this with the script. Just, it might make the difference. You don't know. It's a funny business, you know.
So next we're in Florida, because Max is going to see his brother Jake, who's definitely his brother, because they had a secret code when they were kids. I've no idea why they're telling us this now, but they make a big point of telling us they had a secret code. But yeah, as you said, in the intervening 3 years, Jake split up with his wife, he's lost his house, and he's even lost his dog. But he agrees to help. His daughter wants him to come back alive, even though he isn't exactly the reliable type, and he promises her he will come back alive. Now, Vicky, forgive me if I'm wrong here, but don't, when a character makes that promise that they'll come back alive, don't they have to then die?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to check that.
I thought he was going to, the minute he said it, I was like, oh, wow. Okay,
yeah. Even watching it a second time, I'm thinking, well, he's definitely going to die then, because that's the only reason that happens.
Yeah.
Speaking of dying, we've also got Cheng here. Alex's favourite. So, Alex, you think this is the character that was added in post, but I'm not sure what Cheng actually adds to anything.
I've got no idea. What's his job? What does he do? I don't get it.
I think he works for the Climate Change Council, because that's the headquarters he's in.
Yeah.
He's the chief engineer of their Pacific Division.
Okay.
And he's the one who smells a rat. He figures out there's something going on. His access he's having issues with his access. There's a defective system he spots. So while actually the weather's going haywire around him, the roads start burning up and his little smart car has to drive away from these firebombs and the skyscrapers that are toppling, he also figures out what's going on. But rather than tell Max, he flies to see him. And then even when he's there, he won't tell him. He insists on meeting him in person. And so we just get scene after scene where nothing really happens with him until he dies, having not really done anything.
Yeah.
Can you imagine selling that role to... It's Daniel Wu plays him. Can you imagine selling that role to him? Going, so you got the role of Cheng. So Cheng is like the guy who kind of cracks the code. He solves it, really. He's got the guy who lets the cat out of the bag. And like, you'd be like, cool, like Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day. And you're like, yeah, kind of. you mean, so I'll be there at the end, sort of like alongside the action hero. Yeah, no, you sort of break the code like Jeff Goldblum, then you hide in a cupboard and get knocked down by a car and killed. What do you think?
The hiding in the cupboard is one of my favorite bad scenes, because he's hiding in the cupboard and the baddies break in, and then the head baddie is like, check everything, find out what he knows, which is a conversation they would have had before they broke in, which I know that's a stupid thing, but it's like, there's a better way of doing it.
Yeah, Cheng has the shittiest of shit movies ahead of him. Like, this is his finest moment, dodging that fire. Not for the audience, because we're being asked to invest, like, in a character who we've just met and is now being chased by some gas mains.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't get any better than this for Cheng. It goes downhill pretty rapidly.
But Cheng is the one who sets the political thriller element of this film in motion, so things can get really stupid at the end. And so with his death, let's take a break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back, and the rest of the movie now kind of cuts between the space station and Earth. Jake up in space and Max down on the Earth. So in space, Jake meets Duncan, played by Robert Sheehan, doing an English accent.
Oh, this scene. Robert Sheehan sitting on the back of a chair because fuck chairs, right? I'm a rebel.
I was so desperate for the classic, the trope of the ragtag bunch of sons of bitches misfits, because we're on a space station and people just can't fucking help themselves, that when we go up there, people can't be, even though it's a really professional setup, like Uta, super profesh, apart from everyone just being a scientist with no other specification as to what they do. But then it's like, hooray, we're going to have the scene. And when he's like, they sent us a fucking American. It's like, what do you give a shit? And he's like, I'm a loyal British subject. And it's like, that to me is saying, oh, British people can't let the fucking American War of Independence go. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and you'd be hard pressed to find a British person who even knows what it is. Like, it's not a thing that I don't think we carry around. We're like, I'm not an American. I'm a loyal subject.
But that suggests to me that that was a reshoot. Was the mentioning earlier of him liking soccer, and then here him saying, "Me and my brother were born in the UK." I think because of Gerard Butler's sort of mid transatlantic accent in this film, and it not being like. And the same for his brother. I think audiences were confused as to where these blokes are from and who they are, and so they've put in this really awkward back and forth.
I mean, this scene makes no sense because these are a bunch of specialists, the best of the best up there, and they're working on Dutch Boy, and Jake built Dutch Boy. Like, he's kind of famous for building what they work on, and yet no one knows who he is.
Yeah, like, that's true.
They've never seen a picture of the man who built the space station they're working on. And like, and it takes the German woman to go, "This is Jake Lawson," and they're like, "What? The Jake Lawson? No way!" No one takes into account the fact it says Jake Lawson on his boiler suit this entire scene. it's staring you in the face. This is brilliant. This is why this movie is brilliant. Stuff like this is brilliant.
No, I think Vicky and I are saying it's bad.
No. Let me tell you one other thing, because like, you remember you were saying at the start, Victoria, how this is all about us fighting the weather as opposed to like accepting any responsibility for climate change. Like, never more so. And I respect the movie for going this angle, because what it says. Remember when Gerard Butler drives into a field of literally like 50 space shuttles? Like, there's not just one space shuttle. There's acres. And acres of space shuttles. Like, why there are so many space shuttles is never explained. When it would be necessary to get 1,000 people into space at once is not explained. But this is why it's genius, because it's saying that humankind will not learn. Instead of listening to scientists and looking to renewable energy to prevent climate change, they built Dutch Boy to blow up bad weather. And so now they don't give a fuck about climate change.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like they're literally going, "Yeah, Greta Thunberg, yeah, across the Atlantic on your dumbass solar-powered yacht. We'll just send one of our 50 space shuttles into space." And they're old-fashioned ones, by the way, Greta. They use a lot of fucking fuel. lot of fuel. Disposable boosters that fall back to Earth. So, yeah, this is we're going to send one of them up with one guy on it as well. Like, we literally had no one else and nothing else, no cargo, to send up with him. It's like a fucking space shuttle taxi. It's like a space Uber. It's like Gerard Butler goes, "I'll just get on one of these like billion space shuttles on my own and go to space, you know, and fuck it. We weaponized the International Space Station, so anyone that wants to fuck with us, we blow it up, so we're ready."
Yeah, he's later on in the film, he's upset that they turned his giant laser gun that he invented into a giant laser gun.
Yeah. Can I just say a serious point on that, though? Like, yeah. It's a serious script whinge, so let me just get it off my chest. Because also, as you said, $15 million to fix it, and it's not nice to have a go at somebody else's work and just be like, "Oh, you can't write it like that." But something like this really gets on my nerves, because it will have been discussed, and I don't understand what happened. You get a point in the film where Jim Sturgis says to Gerard Butler, "Your Dutch Boy has been weaponized," and that sort of kicks us off into Act 3 or wherever it comes. "Your Dutch Boy has been weaponized" is page 10 at most, because that's the inciting thing. That's your like call to action to get you into space, so you know you're going up into a nightmare, into a murderous situation, and then you do your little Poirot detective thing while you're up there. But it's not. It's broken, and then you stagger and reveal, "Oh no, it's a weapon." We know it's a weapon because we've seen what it can do. So you put that to the characters, page 10, and then you can have so much fun in space. And it just, I can't let that one go.
You say fun, But I'm not sure, because there are some corrupted drives that they need, and one is stuck outside the spaceship, so they have to don spacesuits and float into action. But I don't know about you. I find fixing stuff in space really boring.
I like a space station. I'm always pleased to be in space.
But I feel like gravity nailed it. I think gravity did it, nailed it. And I think now I just find these long, drawn-out scenes of people floating around fiddling with stuff. It doesn't do anything.
Did you see? Disagree. Only because if it's done well, it's incredible. Did you watch Ad Astra, the Brad Pitt film? The start of that, where he's fiddling about, fixing something in space that goes wrong, is fucking brilliant.
No, it's only good when the monkeys come after him in that film. The unexpected space monkeys.
It's one of many brilliant boom moments in that movie. I was not expecting space monkeys. It was a quiet father and son drama, very contemplative. But no, space monkeys. All right then.
Jake spends a lot of the middle portion of this film as well speaking to people via a giant, very impractical wall. A big Zoom, isn't it? It's big Zoom.
It's the holodeck. It's like it's the bridge of the fucking Enterprise. You've got a call coming in, Jake. Can I take it on a monitor? No, we've got a room for that. You have to go to the room. You have to go to the special room. We didn't build this for fun. Oh yeah, like why does he? He knows about it. Let's remember, Jake built this space station, so he built that room. So he is responsible for having to stand in a room. Like talking to a massive Jim Sturgis haircut.
But that's where he's able to use the unspoken code between brothers, which clearly needs to be spoken from what I could tell. It's very much not an unspoken code.
But he also tells us that's the secret code between brothers. So if anyone was listening, they'd be like, oh, hang on. And there might be a secret code in this message, actually, thinking about it.
But even if you didn't know, if I heard that conversation where someone goes, it's not even grammatically correct. He goes, remember when our dad took us fishing and bad big fish caught, he did, but family important. I'd listen to that and go, they're definitely fucking talking in code, because it makes no others. That's a code. Break that code.
But yeah, that's how he manages to pass the message on to Max, to Jim Sturgis on Earth, who teams up with Dana, played by Zazie Beetz, to figure out, help with his satellite gizmo and then help cracking the code. And they figure out this sabotage happening at the very highest level of government.
Oh, yeah.
Something to do with Project Zeus, where they've weaponized Dutch boy and they're targeting cities and they're trying to figure out who is responsible, because the only way to shut down Dutch boy is to temporarily turn it off and on again.
Yeah.
Which the climax revolves around. And to do that, they need the kill codes from the president. Yeah. But is the president responsible?
Well, he could be. He could be, because do you remember when Abby Cornish is with Jim Sturgis and they're finding out a lot about this situation? This is why I think there was a reshoot. This is when Cheng is still alive, by the way. But she's. This is what I'm saying about doing a shoddy job on top of a shoddy job, but it being so shoddy, it verges on the amazing. She's in bed in a blue nightie and dressing gown. And the cuts are so bad. She turns a corner because she's just in a nightie. Like, and the dressing gown has gone. Jim Sturgis is on the phone, and this is where Cheng explains to him what a geostorm is, which I felt needed to be explained at some point. It's the title of the fucking film. And he goes, if Dutch boy has a catastrophic malfunction, it can create something far worse than what we're trying to prevent. So basically, a geostorm would not exist without Dutch boy. It's not a naturally occurring phenomenon. Like, Gerald Butler has built a death space station. Yeah. And then, like, he finds out all this on the phone, Jim Sturgis. And because I was getting pretty anal at this point, I timed the length of his real-time phone conversation with Cheng. It lasts 45 seconds. How long do you think it takes to take off a nightie, get dressed in a suit, shirt, and do your hair different, and put on some earrings and shoes? At the fastest, if you were really in a rush. How fast do you think you could do that?
44 seconds.
Yeah, 44 and a half. No, I couldn't.
You both know you couldn't. Abby Cornish walks around a corner as he starts that conversation, walks back, is fully dressed in a different outfit, goes, I got a call, I'm going to work. You're like, what the fuck?
She's also she refers
that
to
that wasn't bad enough. Look at the fireplace in his flat underneath the TV. Victoria, surely you noticed this. What with, you know, having to, you know, do work on your house at the moment. It's got a really shit. It's been plasterboarded up.
Yeah, I saw like, that.
It's like yeah, right. Because it's basically they haven't even bought. They've gone. Has anyone got a house we can use for these reshoots? Like Jerry and Danny have pretty much pocketed the 15 million. Can we borrow? Can we borrow?
Can we borrow
from
this house? Yeah.
This is just like, what the fuck is that? Why are you living? Why would you not do something with that? It's anyway.
I also don't really understand their theory here. They think the president is doing this so that if there's something wrong with Dutch Boy, the world will let him keep hold of Dutch Boy and he can retain autonomous control. But surely if it's fucking up, they'll take it off. This happened on your watch, mate. So yeah, you're done.
I'm not handing over damaged goods. Not now. Not ever. Why have you done it before? Like, what's this? Why is this a big deal for you? Like, it feels like...
I mean, I don't know. Is that a serious point, though? Is that a sort of... without wanting to sound like offensive, but is it a very sort of US stereotype where it's like they couldn't consider that even though this is a shared endeavor, that the rest of the world would have the power to take it off them? So an audience would question that. If say the French and the UK got together and were like, I'm sorry, and India and whoever else is up there, and Mexico, that you're making a mess of this. And you have literally no procedures for fixing it, by the way, beyond sending Gerard Butler up there. Like, where are the engineers that work there that are like, oh, has something gone wrong? We'll fix it. So yeah, maybe it just would. It's unimaginable that would happen to an audience. I don't know.
I mean, there's evidence that no one really knows what the hell is going on up there. I mean, Gerard Butler is probably the best person to solve it up there because you've got there's the bit where the robot arm goes haywire, mm-hmm. and the Mexican engineer is basically holding a red box with a couple of joysticks on it. He's going, it won't work. It won't work. And I think at one point he bangs this box. He's holding. It's like, is that like a remote control for that giant robot arm? It's not pre-programmed. There's no computer system operating. It's you with your fucking joysticks on your big red box.
Yeah,
that's weird. And then the French security guy turns up and his job is security and safety on the station. And he goes, I have a gun. And it's like, you've got a gun. On a space station. Like, tell me it's a laser gun or like something that is sort of like use weather as a weapon. Does it fire like really high velocity wind? Like, is it weather themed? It's like, no, it's just a gun. I will shoot you. It's like, I'll fucking blow a hole in it. That better come back. Oh, at least that does. At least that does come back because Robert Sheehan blows himself up.
Yeah, well, we're back up in space and there's apparently 200 satellites reporting malfunctions. So we see giant hail hitting Tokyo and Rio gets frozen and then there's a tidal wave going
incredible.
After a girl who struggles to run.
incredible scene. She gets chased. It's like, I swear to God, Dean Devlin was like, it was almost like he was in the room where like when Roland Emmerich was shooting The Day After Tomorrow and just found some bits of paper on the floor that Roland wasn't using and went, it's like he picked the bit in fucking, if you're going to pick a bit in The Day After Tomorrow, do not pick the bit in that movie that everyone goes, wait, Jake Gyllenhaal outran ice. That's what you, don't see that and go, well, that was great, wasn't it, everyone? Let's put that in this fucking movie. Let's have a girl on a beach not only outrun ice, like in The Day After Tomorrow, the bit that everyone hates, let's also have her outrun dead seabirds that are attacking.
I like that, though.
It's like a joke from a David Zucker movie, because it's like, oh, well, she dodged the tiny dead seabirds falling from the sky. A jumbo jet next. Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, and there's cyclones in Mumbai as well and a tidal wave in Dubai. So it's all kicking off. They've got an hour and 30 minutes to the geostorm. And I think I didn't really understand. They start using replacement satellites to take out the infected satellites. Is that right?
No idea.
Yeah,
it all gets a bit fuzzy. What's this satellite called? I call it the Rock and Roller. You know, like that Guy Ritchie movie you made. That seems like a lot. So this is the actual Guy Ritchie movie that was called Rock and Roller, a phrase not often used. We've decided to call it that in this movie. It's a fictional satellite that we could have named anything. We could literally have called it anything, but we've chosen a name for a movie that you played the lead in, Gerard Butler. How's that?
And so on top of that, the space station starts to self-destruct, so everyone has to evacuate. And this is the moment that Jerry Butler and Robert Sheehan go at each other. We find out that Rob was the saboteur because he wasn't getting paid enough. And then he turns into Michael Caine from the Batman films and says, "Aren't you a bit curious to watch the world burn?"
I can't believe you did that.
Copy and paste.
You can't go there.
Coffee and paste.
Everyone watching it is like, "Oh, that's a good film. Fuck." You just can't.
And he then gets sucked out. And so back on Earth, this is when the political thriller kicks into high gear. Because Ed Harris plays Defense Secretary Deckham, who explains that the president is the kill codes and that they'll need his fingerprints and retina scan to do all this. He tells all this while walking past press, saying it quite loudly as well. I don't think he's very good at his job. And they slowly figure out that Ed Harris is actually trying to kill the president and everyone in line for the presidency. This is his plan.
So there's a car chase, an electric storm hits, cranes are falling, and then Deckham does something I wasn't expecting him to do, which is get a rocket launcher out of the boot of his car. Do Secret Service always have a rocket launcher in the boot?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And he finds it at a car that's driving towards them and blows the car up.
Chris, it's not a car. We've already established it's a self-driving taxi. Because why on earth would they make the point earlier when Jim Sturgess arrives in the car? Why would Abbie Cornish go, why have you got a self-driving taxi, if only to set up a scene that happens less than 10 minutes later where the car can drive itself?
Okay, I'd missed that line and I've been trying to figure out who they'd murdered. But it was no one.
Yeah, it's a self-driving taxi. Remember, this is set 2 years in the future where self-driving cars are commonplace.
So the president is saved. Someone says, "How the hell did you?" And rather than answer the question of how he made it there in one piece, his answer is simply, "Because I'm the goddamn president of the United States of America."
That is so lazy. It's so lazy.
The rocket launcher thing's fine, though. I like the rocket launcher. It reminded me of... From Paris with Love, which is a great film. I think maybe I like this movie because it reminds me of other films that I've enjoyed, like The Day After Tomorrow and From Paris with Love.
It's one of those experiences. I'm glad I've seen it, and I'm really glad I've seen it and I've been able to talk about it almost immediately, because if I just watched it and just didn't have anywhere to put all this anger, I don't think it'd be very healthy for me.
We still haven't got on to my reasoning. I might not even do it in this show, by the way. I might save it for the verdict, but okay. I'm gonna blow your mind, Victoria, and indeed Chris, but mainly you, Victoria.
So the villain is using weather as a weapon, and we find out the villain is the Secretary of Defense. Is this not the same plan as Sean Connery had in the original Avengers movie? And is that another film that's better than this, potentially?
No, AG. We're having a puppet geostorm, but let's not get crazy, right? You're talking about the Avengers film. So, no, it's not better than this. Jesus Christ.
And we're in the home straight now.
Whoa. Ed Harris has delivers some great villainous speeches. He says he's using Dutch Boy to take out America's enemies. Which, from the attacks we've seen, because he wants to wake up and all America's enemies will have been vanquished as if by a hand of God. From the attacks we've seen, America's biggest enemies, according to Ed Harris, are based in Mumbai, Dubai, and those real fuckers on Copacabana Beach in Rio.
What did Brazil do? It's an emerging economy.
It's a booming economy. It's Tokyo, Dubai, and Brazil. Aren't these booming economies?
Yeah. They saved the biggest destruction, though, not for on Earth, but for like you say, because Gerard Butler, remember, he's built this space station, and as I've claimed, rightly so, throughout this podcast, he's built a death trap. Walls blow out, killing scientists immediately. Robot arms go insane. Wasted space of giant holodecks to make his phone call. He's just built, like, he's really Dr. Fibes'd it. He's like Dr. fucking Fibes. He's built a death trap, and he's also built a self destruct system that is irreversible. What the fuck? like what on earth? So you've got a self destruct system, and once it goes, it can't be turned off for any reason at all. It just can't be turned off. Cool. Okay. And then he goes, yep, that's the self destruct system starting as bits of the space station are exploding with the crew still on board. It goes, and they're on there and it's exploding. And he goes, yeah, that's the first bit to go. What's the first bit to go? The fucking fuel tanks. They blow the fuel tanks first. So what's an insane part to blow up first? Surely that's the last thing you do because it's full of fucking fuel.
But he's successful in terms of rebooting the system. So we do save the Earth, but it means he's going to die unless he does a Hail Mary.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It means floating to a satellite and then getting in a pod and flying home and signalling Earth with some thrusters.
Yeah. Where's that come from? I love a movie that basically will introduce something that has never been mentioned before in the final act as a tool to save our hero, which is him using the boosters of, like you say, a satellite to signal SOS in Morse code. It's like, you've not mentioned Morse code once, let alone the boosters of a satellite. Why isn't he using his brother's secret code about fishing? That would be good.
So he gets saved and the weather goes back to normal on Earth. So we don't actually ever get to see the geostorm, which is kind of what I signed up for.
Did you notice the bit in Dubai? So the water or the big wave is approaching and there's a man in a high conference room watching and all this water is sloshing around. It's like, that can't happen. This is the desert or whatever. And then when the geostorm, which incidentally is an event that shouldn't happen, but the computer has a countdown clock for an event that shouldn't happen, but nonetheless.
I remember Dr. Fibes, Gerard Butler built a death trap. That space station is a death trap.
But isn't it funny how the water drains away from Dubai like someone's pulled a plug? It's like, geostorm's finished. Oh, well, the water's going to leave. it wouldn't leave. It would just stop, but it would sit there. It just, whatever.
I don't know. I think tsunami water dissipates afterwards. I think it's does like, sort it, of
instantly.
Go down.
Okay.
Well, it depends. It either dissipates or it freezes and attracts wolves, like in the day after tomorrow. The water sort of hangs around, then freezes, and then wolves come. So they were about, doing my calculations, they were about 10 minutes away from a group of wolves being in Dubai.
Well, speaking of canines, a kid finds a dog that he lost, but I couldn't be bothered to mention that earlier because it's such a horrendous cliche. Jake meets Max's fiance Sarah. The president apologises and everyone ignores the German scientist. The end.
I know. Poor Utter, honestly. Although I will say, it probably wasn't meant to turn out like this, but the fact that her and Gerard Butler have a platonic relationship was quite refreshing.
Mm.
But it probably wasn't meant to be like that.
I mean, that's it. There's like a 6 months later postscript, but I think we've said enough about this film.
Very quickly, Gerard Butler looks 1,000 times better at the end of this movie than he does at the start. He looks like he's lost weight. He looks like he's been on a sunbed. He looks great. I just want to, you know, I think he looks almost piratey if he was a really healthy pirate.
100% agree. You got my number, Jerry. Give us a ring. But should we do the bits?
I will say the minute it finished, because I watched it with my mum, and the second it finished, she said, that is the worst film I've seen since Battlefield Earth. And then almost by way of apology to John Travolta and indeed this film, she said, but then again, I don't really like Gerard Butler, so I wouldn't have liked it anyway. I do not
agree with Alex's mum, if you're listening, Jerry.
Yeah. Cool. Let's do the bits.
What's your favourite scene, Victoria?
I'm going to choose Abby Cornish reversing an electric car and shooting someone repeatedly. But lots of reasons. I can't really drive in reverse that well, so I was very jealous. It was memorable. It looked cool. That's it.
This is so funny. So my favourite scene is when Abby Cornish needs a threat on the president's life, so fires her gun in the air at the convention. I said that's the first and only cool moment in this film. So we both went for cool Abby Cornish moments.
Oh, my God. My favourite moment is the moment, and I kid you not, it's written in front of me. I will read it ad verbatim. Abby Cornish spinning a car 180 degrees into reverse, shooting out the driver of the other car and spinning it back round. So cool. I giggled.
Oh, that's so funny. Classic Cornish.
Yep. Great moment.
Although
great
moment. She does call the President of the United States POTUS a couple of times in this, which gives me flashbacks to when I used to watch The West Wing and thought POTUS was the name of the character that wasn't on screen. I don't know how long I thought that was a thing. When did this POTUS bloke show up? They keep talking about him.
Wait, are there twins somewhere? Who is Floatus? POTUS and Floatus? Are they going to make an appearance?
I should have admitted that. MVW, most valuable whatever, Alex.
Probably only as good here as he could be playing a pirate. It's Gerard Butler. I love him. I love Gerard Butler. I think, you know, I think he's so good that he somehow manages to do two things at once. He delivers his lines like he's like totally committed to this movie. Like this is probably the greatest film that's ever been made. While simultaneously going, I know I'm in a piece of shit. Like only he can do that. He can act in both ways. Like he gives a chameleon-like performance where you take from it what you want to believe Gerard Butler thinks of the movie he's in.
Vicky?
Abby Cornish, because of when she drives that car. And also when she's like, shots fired, get Porters out of the building. I was like, that's good. You keep on like this, Abby Cornish, and you're Charlize Theron in a few years. Like, seriously, she was brilliant.
I'm going to tell you a story now. In September 2014, Catherine Winnick was cast as Olivia Lawson, Jake's wife. She shot her scenes, but a couple of years later, she was no longer in the film. Catherine Winnick is my MVW because whether it was her decision or not, she managed to extract herself from this hot pile of garbage. And if you could change anything, what would you change, Alex?
So, of all the moments in this movie that I feel could have done with another $15 million thrown at them and reshoots, one bit really, really aggravates me, and it's the point at which Jim Sturgess's haircut at one point walks into a room and it says, "You and me." And Zazie Beetz is all like, "It's you and I," which is actually wrong. It's incorrect. It's grammatically correct to say you and me. Like, you can't say, like, Vicky and me or Chris and me. Then it's like Vicky and I or Chris and I. But you can say you and me. And the fact that a writer wrote that and went, that's great. She's picking him up on his shitty grammar. And it got to be shot on screen as a thing. And no one's ever gone, but that's right. He's right to say you and me. It's like, who wouldn't know that you can say you and me? Like, what, how would you not know that? It's so weird. So that bit, I changed the bit where Zazie Beetz goes, it's you and I, idiot. And makes yourself look stupid.
Vicky, you got a better one than that?
I've got a few. So, good. As I've said, your Dutch boy has been weaponized. That's page 10 at the latest. You can stick it on page 3. Let's get going kind of thing. Some of the crew up there have a job that is in any way distinguishable from somebody else's job beyond pressing a joystick. Like, how much training do you need to be on Dutch Boy? None. And yeah, because then Gerard Butler's like, let's check the rock and rollers then. And everyone's like, what a fucking good idea. And it's like, why would that not have occurred to anybody? Anyway, I think what you should do, because it is suggested, but everyone's like, this is a great effort between nations and we all pulled together and we put aside our differences. And when Gerard Butler gets up there, you should play on the tensions between nations bubbling up very quickly. So he's basically walking into World War III. Mm. Yeah.
Agreed. And I think in that interrogation scene at the start, it should be Secretary of State Deccan, played by Ed Harris, interrogating Jake at that hearing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We often talk about collapsing characters, but rather than Richard Schiff, that should be Ed Harris. So it all kind of connects.
Did you notice that character's name, remember, he's quite an angry man and he's berating Gerard Butler, and the character's name is Thomas Cross.
I also agree with something Vicky said at the start. I think it's bang out of order to have a film exploit the subject of climate change without exploring the subject in any way, shape or form. I don't think you get to have that serious holier-than-thou narration at the beginning and end without saying anything of any substance. So I think it wouldn't have gone amiss to actually say something.
Yeah,
that's the point of the movie. I told you, though, the whole point of this movie is that it's saying we can't learn as a species. That's why we have 50 space shuttles to ferry one man into space and burn as much. You know, I'm surprised there weren't wood burning fires on the space station. The movie is saying, you know, rather than actually listen to scientists, we are doomed to fail. Because we will just find a weapon to blow up weather rather than like use renewable energy. It's in our DNA as a species.
Right. Is that it?
I believe so.
Would you have still
there? Yeah.
Okay. Do you want a quiz?
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Okay. It's a weather quiz this week. How well do you know your weather?
Not very well.
I know which weather I would like to see blown up.
I know which weather I hate the most.
Right. Yeah. Question one. What does the Beaufort scale measure?
Wind.
Humidity.
Vicky is correct. It is wind speed. Which weatherman played down fears of the great storm of 1997?
Michael Fish.
It was Michael Fish. Give the popular nautical term that refers to the belt near the equator where sailing ships sometimes get stuck on windless waters.
The doldrums.
Correct, Alex. It's the doldrums.
That is so good. I didn't know that.
I'm super impressed. All right, this one I liked. What is the luminous blue-green plasma that looks like lightning on ships' masts or aircraft wings?
Sea Fritz.
Foo Fighters.
It's also the name of a Brat Pack movie we mentioned a couple of weeks ago.
St. Elmo's Fire.
Correct.
Yes!
Which of the following cities gets the most rainfall per year? Tokyo, London, Chicago or Rome?
Tokyo.
Tokyo, London, Chicago. Tokyo.
You're both right there. You both get a point. What is the name given to a column of swirling dust or soil raised into the air by small...
Tornado.
No.
A dust devil.
Twister.
It's a dust devil. Alex is right there.
Shit.
Alex, this is a question just for you. If Vicky had to go to one of those Greenland shelters in a hurry, what one personal item would she take?
Bottle of WKD.
Incorrect. Vicky, what's the answer?
No, because Chris asked me this question and I gave him a serious answer. So I think it's probably unfair on you because you're just not in that headspace. But it's my photo album with pictures of the boys, obviously, because it's irreplaceable.
So Alex got that wrong. Alex, I asked you this question as well, didn't I?
Yes, you did. What do you think I replied, Victoria?
No, you didn't respond. Therefore, I'm going to drop you a point for spoiling the quiz. So you could have won a point, you've lost a point, and that means it's a draw, so we go into the tiebreaker.
Oh god.
Which disaster movie featured a flying cow?
Oh, Twister. Fuck. Mars Attacks.
Twister.
Oh yeah, it was Twister. But there is no, the cow's on fire in... Oh shit.
It was Twister. Well played, Alex.
Fuck.
You won it. You won it in spite of losing a bloody point because you're rubbish.
Did you just ignore him? Why did you ignore him?
Because I don't know. I just thought it was like, if it had said I felt it was a bit probing, to be perfectly honest. I felt like if I'd known it was for the quiz, I'd have gone, oh, right, so it's for the quiz. You're going to turn it into a question. But yeah, I just sort of thought it was a bit personal question, Chris. I'm not really in that headspace right now. And I never sort of came back to it after that. I was a bit like, it's not sort of my business. If I'm going to take something with me, it might be something I don't want to tell
Chris, anyone. I think you should dock him another point for his insouciance.
Vicky's won the quiz.
Yay!
No, that's not how it works. Absolutely not. Geostorm. Right. That is us done with Geostorm. I'm going to sort of save my wonderful explanation for why it's not a bad film till Thursday. How's that for a hook? In the meantime...
It's quite a weird thing to do, though, to not actually say it on the Geostorm episode.
Yeah, but I think you'll sit better in the verdict, Chris.
Right, it's all good, in the verdict. All good.
All right, please do subscribe to us. Rate and review us if you have the time. It's great for us. It's great help. Not just great for us. It's great to help us. It is great help for us. And check us out on Twitter and Instagram, where we reside, at ClashPod. We will be back on Thursday talking about Greenland. Until then, bye-bye.
I've got a clue.
And we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special deleted scene from this edition of Clash of the Titles. So for those of you who stuck around, Chris has a clue.
Okay. The clue for next week's films is Blame It on the Boogie.
Blame It on the Boogie. Lovely stuff. That is our clue. Get on Twitter for another clue at ClashPod, back on Thursday. Again, bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.